then sold to the white settlers who were coming in. But as a lot of people predicted at the time, that Indian land, more and more of it was lost. And in 50 years, they had lost half of all the land they held throughout the United States. And when President Roosevelt came in 1933, his administration stopped it, and they repealed that law, and so that they could keep what they still had left. They had half their land left, and the Roosevelt administration also set aside money to buy back land, more land, to replace the land the Indians had lost. Well, I mention that to show that if you've got a good enough case, I'm sure the government, Congress, will listen. But it's nothing new to change these things.
In your travels, are you finding support for this sort of thing? Or I guess we need to be looking at other people rather than them looking at us. In your visits around Alaska, what sort of reactions are you getting?
Well, in some places I've been, I can tell you there is deep resentment about ANCSA. People say, almost in bewilderment, look, our land claims were settled back in 1971. That was the whole purpose, to settle it. It's the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. And now we're told it wasn't settled, that we could still lose it all, and it's the Settlement Act that may well be the instrument by which we'll lose our land. So there is a lot of resentment. People in some villages feel the corporations have served them well, but in most villages people feel that they have received very little from the corporations. That is, there has been little in the way of dividends. Very few of them are employed by the corporations. So they say, well, what does all of this mean to us? But their principal concern is the land. They want to keep the land for subsistence. And I haven't yet been to a village that said, we just as soon sell our shares and get the money. And but in some villages, especially those villages that depend on the land for subsistence, feeling is running very, very high. Now, some of them say, as I indicated at the beginning tonight, some of them say, well, let's strengthen the limitations that prevent outsiders taking over our corporations. Extend 1991, or deny people the right to sell shares. Others say, no, these corporations will never be the safest place to keep our land, so let's turn the land over to our IRA governments or traditional councils. And as I said to you earlier, I said, look, there are lots of ideas floating around out there, and I've explained some of them, just as I did tonight, how other people are doing this. And, well, that's what I found out.
Tom Gilligan has anything to say. Bob Adams.
Yes.
Well, after just 20 years, if there's some confusion about what to do with the Native Land Claims Settlement Act, I might point out that 200 years ago, when the Constitution was written after a few years of the Confederacy in 1783, or perhaps it was 1787, this was a relatively new experiment in land usage. There had been private corporations before, but it had never been owned outside of monarchy before. I might point out that it's the private use of land by corporations which has permitted such monuments to human cleanliness as Love Canal, as the Federal Reservation in Hanford, which has contributed to the most radioactive river on the planet, the Columbia River, which in terms of land usage demonstrates a total contempt for long-term use of land by a people and immediate use for profit by a few people. And that is the message of what has happened with the corporate structure of the United States as fomented by this 1971 Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. So that's the guideline which was handed to the Native people of Alaska, private corporations. The record of the United States in the last 200 years under the Constitution has not been good. The use of land has been very poor. Enormous species have been totally extincted. This is not necessarily the only guideline which can be attempted by a people trying to keep common use of their land. And I recommend that other options be considered in the light of American history.
Thank you. You made an interesting point. That is, after the War of Independence, the U.S. Government was set up under the Articles of Confederation. I think it was in 1780.
Yes.
Well,
Johnson was the chairman.
Well, the war was still on. And then in 1789, when the Founding Fathers met at Philadelphia, they ripped up the old Constitution that had only been going for about 10 years and said, this is no good. We've got to start over again. That's an interesting precedent. I'd never thought of that. But well, we're... Would others like to speak? I have the feeling I've been doing most of the talking, and I think... Well, there's a demand here that we take a break. Maybe we could take a five-minute break, and if you have any thing further to add after that, we can carry on for as long as you want. But this might be a good time to take a break. Maybe we should start again. Well, would anybody else like to come up to the front here and say something? All right, I think we have a...
Got somebody out. My name is Dennis Robinson. I'm with the Unalaska Corporation, excuse me, director. I could touch on that 1991. I feel it should be extended just because, well, we're not prepared for it, and I don't think anybody else in the state of Alaska is. And you said, like, if they were to extend it, you'd come up with problems, or you know, more problems. But I for one, would rather confront those problems than not have a problem to confront at all.
Sorry,
Well, okay, say 1991 was it, and our shares just got bought up, then we wouldn't have any problem, would we?
No, you wouldn't have any land either.
No, you know, and that's what I'm saying.
And you'd have the money, whatever you got for the shares. You might have spent it, but you would have had the benefit of it.
But my daughter wouldn't. She's, you know, born after 1971. There's no way she can become the act says a shareholder, well, an Aleut, unless I die, or 1991, and I disagree with that. It's, I think, for an Aleut, since there is so little of them, that the bloodline should be changed. That it, doesn't require a, have a requirement on it that if they are Aleut, that they could become shareholders. Just for the fact that we're lost, just we're a lost people, just wiped out, suppressed, it's gone. That's about all I have to say.
Yeah, let me ask you this. One solution to the whole question of who is an Aleut and who is an Indian
is another problem.
Well, one solution that's been proposed is let the people decide. That is, if the corporation or the organization itself, whatever it is, accepts a person as an Aleut, as a member, that's the end of it. That is, instead of having a blood quantum requirement, it's up to the people who constitute the organization themselves to decide whether or not they'll admit somebody as a member. Is that person accepted as an Aleut in the community, in his own, her own community? That's a test that's been proposed, and that is the Supreme Court of the U.S. has upheld the right of Indian tribes in the lower 48 to decide for themselves who is entitled to be a member of the tribe. It's one way around the blood quantum. This isn't an easy issue, but that's mm-hmm. one possible way around it.
But ANCSA isn't an easy issue.
No.
It's pretty complex. I don't even understand it yet. Been a director for almost 3 years now, and I still have very little understanding of it. But like I say, I don't agree with 1991 stocks becoming transferable, and my daughter not being able to be an Aleut mm-hmm. by according to ANSCA. That's all I have to say. So.
Thanks, Mr. Robinson.
First, my name's Walter Talman. I'm from Kinnick, near Anchorage. I'm enrolled in a village corporation and Cook Inlet Regional Corporation. And I've been listening here to comments, and I guess this is my opportunity to comment. I'm not in Anchorage, so. I think that based on what little I know of the ANCSA and how it was passed, that I would think that there wasn't very much fairness given to the Native people since they weren't corporate-minded, and also since there was a deadline. Oil companies wanted to get their oil, and they were pressuring the government. And I think that there should be consideration taken again on making changes that are affecting the Native corporations and also the Native people because of it. There's so many effects, bad effects, that I don't think a person could sit down and name them all in an evening, but I think that it would be fair for the government and to reconsider and allow the natives some say in a fair way to decide what this settlement should have been about and should be about. I suppose that's what this meeting's for here today, to get an idea what kind of amendments or changes to this ANCSA Act. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And, well, in the village I'm from, we are pretty inexperienced. And most of our board members became board members when they were young, 18 years old. And very few of us graduated from high school. And we didn't know what corporations were about. And the older people who probably had the knowledge to know how life should have been lived and what was good for us didn't understand corporations. They didn't hardly understand English. So they kind of were out of the picture. And I think if there's going to be some kind of reconsideration of the act and of the how it should be handled, and you know, if there's going to be a trust or if they're going to amend the act, that somehow they should include the elders and the older people who've been around. And a lot of times I know I make mistakes, and I'm young, I just feel like a little kid, yet all this responsibility was placed on us to run these corporations. And it's too soon. And for instance, I'd like to explain one thing happened in our village. Was we owned, we have title to, our village corporation has title to land where the Susitna Dam site is to be located. And the state decided to build a feasibility study camp near where the dam site's going to be so they could study the area and build, to decide if they're going to build this dam. And they do it on our land through an agreement by us worked out by a consultant who we didn't even know, but who managed to get in there because of his experience. And he's also a consultant for another regional company. And anyway, they built this camp and we're all working as laborers, feeling pretty proud of ourselves and our company. And not really understanding that we're proposing, since it's on our land, to build a dam and dam up the fish that comes through the river that we eat. And we didn't see it that way, you know. We just see it where we're but then when I got on the board and I started understanding a little more about these, about land and land management and subsurface and surface, and I find out that a year later, after I was on the board for a year, that we were involved in a lawsuit against our regional corporation who was saying they owned the subsurface, which was all the rock and gravel, which was nearby this land that they're going to use for the fill and the dam. And this was this to do with the 7i issue. Of course, we didn't believe that. We thought that the rock was ours because it's laying on the surface and the gravel. And but it's pretty ironic that I belong to both corporations and my one corporation was suing my other corporation. In fact, we were selling land to be able to be in this lawsuit. So it's, I think that's a small example. And there's, you know, lots more. There's, you talk about 7I, then there's 14F, which is village boundary. You, the regional corporation must get the permission of the village corporation to go across village boundaries. But again, ANCSA did not define the difference between surface and subsurface. I mean, they didn't define also between what was village boundary. And our regional president told our board, village boundary is the village itself. We say, no, village boundary is all the land that we selected. But our region says, no, on behalf of our, on the shareholders who I represent, 80% of whom are at large, we say that village boundaries are just your village area. And we can trespass and dig old sand and gravel off your village land without your permission. This was our leverage to say, well, okay, if you want the sand and gravel or the oil, we get a percent so you can trespass on our land and take it. But see, so that's another important thing that was never defined in the act. And there's too much language that was not put in there to define things. And I think that this idea of Inuit trust is where you're born and you're part of it, part of the land, because that's what how it was. We were born, and you know, my grandparents and my parents, they were born and they lived on the land. And if it didn't reject them, they lived in that area. If it, there was none of this paper that said you, this was your land under these circumstances. For the federal government to decide what, or for the United States government, since you're Canadian, I guess, I'll say it this way.
I know what you mean when you say the federal government.
For them to give back to you land in set circumstances on it or conditions on it, when you're already, that land was already there, was already yours to use. It, now you can go on your land and you can trespass and you can sue your own brother who's the board member. And it's, this isn't the way it was, you know. I know they probably tried to do something workable. And I think they were, it was done so fast that the Native people didn't get to see what they were getting into. And you know, another chance would be great if that's what's possible. This time I think they should plan, though. They should get the word out to all the people and do it in a Native way. And don't do it by their book, you know. You'll have the same problems, I think. Well, thanks for the
thank
time.
Thank you. Yes, please.
My name is Abby Dixon, and I live in Unalaska, but I'm not a member of the corporation. I just had a question. In the hearings that you've held around Alaska, the issue of land and taxation of land, when it's been raised, I wondered, this corporation here, the nonprofit also, there's a nonprofit, I'm getting confused here. There is a nonprofit corporation here, there is not an IRA. And I just wondered what the possibility would be of the land going, like in a local land bank situation, to the nonprofit in trust so that it couldn't be taxed. And that when the profit corporation needed to lease for income purposes for the shareholders, if they could then draw it out of the bank and then use it that way. Because I live here and I really love the Aleutians. They're very beautiful. And I really appreciate the lifestyle that people live here. And so I have a concern that the lifestyle continue and that the hassles be diminished. There's not enough time in people's lives to waste on hassles. And there've got to be some changes because it's just not right to lose the land.
Well, your suggestion is one that people have brought up at other places. They've said, well, why not have an IRA council that holds the land, that owns the land, and then it can lease it to the prophet, the local village profit-making corporation. And thus, when land can be developed at a profit, it's available, and yet the rest of the land isn't liable to be taxed by the state or the borough or the city or whatever. Well, your idea is one that a lot of people think is a good one. But it's one of those ideas that I think deserves to be considered along with the other. I think there's a range of options, and that's one option. The IRA governments and the traditional councils are the bodies that by law are recognized as having inherent sovereignty. That is, before the Russians came to the Aleutians, the Aleuts governed themselves. They were a sovereign people. Well, that sovereignty residing in the people, the Aleut people, is still acknowledged to exist under U.S. law, but where is it? Who's entitled to exercise that sovereign power? It doesn't mean sovereign power in the sense that you can demand a seat at the United Nations or appoint ambassadors or any of that sort of thing, but it is what U.S. law describes as limited sovereignty. Well, the law says that the IRA governments and the traditional tribal councils are the bodies that can exercise that sovereignty, and they can claim immunity from taxation for any land that they hold. Now, the land they hold is, and they hold land in the lower 48, and there are similar bodies in Canada and in other countries. That is, in the lower 48, practically all the Indian tribes are IRA governments or traditional councils exercising inherent sovereignty, and that's why their land can't be taxed. But their land is held in trust by the Secretary of the Interior. There's a reservation in Alaska, Metlakatla, mm-hmm. and the land is held by the Secretary of Interior in trust for the people of Metlakatla, so it can't be taxed. They can decide who can come into that town and who can work there, and but the Secretary of Interior holds it in trust. Now, people have said, just as you did, have the corporations transfer the land to the IRA government? Well, the Secretary of Interior has said, well, I won't accept those transfers. He said, I won't hold that land in trust for IRA governments because you got your corporations and you're supposed to make them work, and so we can't have the land
come back.
Well, so there's two questions. One is, well, is that that's what Secretary Clark said when he came with President Reagan to Alaska in April, when the president met the Pope. Whether that statement of policy is one that might be altered, or whether immediately he said it, some people said, oh, well, he could be forced to accept the transfers because the U.S. government is is obliged to do that. But of course, one thing that people are concerned about is they want have the they don't want their land to be subject to veto by the Secretary of the Interior. So that's why ideas like the Inuit Trust in Canada that I mentioned might be suitable here, because then you get away from the overlordship of the Secretary of the Interior. Now, it should be also be understood that since ANCSA in the lower 48, the Indian tribes have gained an awful lot of independence of the federal government. All of this has happened in the last 13 years, and they levy their own taxes, they have their own zoning, they can impose taxes on mines that open up in land that they own, and that is, the native governments impose the taxes. And all of these things have happened within the last few years, and that's why in Alaska some native people are saying maybe we should go IRA, you know, that's anyway, that something to think about.
Thanks.
Yes, that's right. I'm sorry. You asked, would the Unalaska Aleut Development Corporation qualify as an IRA? Well, IRAs are chartered by the federal government, so it wouldn't qualify as an IRA. Whether it would qualify as a traditional council, I don't know, because I don't know enough about it, how it came into being, how long it's been in being, how it was established. If it's I think that it's a question for people to decide what they want to do with their land, and then determine the best way of doing it. If you did decide to do this or do that, legal underbrush could be cleared away. It seems to me that in this type of situation, before you call in the lawyers and say, figure something out for us, there's a lot to be said for deciding what you yourselves want to do. Then bring them in. And so that's why I've insisted in all these discussions that we keep the whole range of possibilities in our minds.
Right. Margaret Lekanoff again, and I have a question for you. I'd like to know what your options are. If perchance the resolutions are accepted by Congress and ANCSA is amended, has the issue been brought up about if the corporations can buy back stock? If that corporation doesn't have the money to buy back that stock, of course they could set their own precedents at how much stock they want to buy, if they want to buy all 100 shares or 50 or 25, etc. But if they can't buy back the stock, what is the shareholder to do? I mean, what are the options? Have you heard any options?
Well, the right to buy back shares means that people can sell their shares. In other words, if you assume that people should have the right to sell their shares, but you're concerned about losing control of native corporations, then you say, okay, you can sell your shares, but the corporation gets the right of first refusal. That is, they get the right to buy them. But if they don't have the money to buy them, the shareholder can still go out and sell them. otherwise he doesn't have any right to sell them. I mean, if the corporation can set its own price or refuse to buy them at all, then the shareholder has no right to sell.
Well, my understanding of this, the 1991 retreat, was one of the issues was that they're trying to make a resolution that the only the corporation buy back the shares, not to be sold to anyone else.
Yeah, well, under ANILCA right now, the 1980 amendments to ANCSA, your corporation here, the Unalaska Corporation, could pass a resolution saying that anybody who wants to sell shares in 1991 must give the corporation the right of first refusal. They can buy them back. But that doesn't mean that if they don't have the money to buy them back or refuse to buy them back, that the shareholder can't sell. Any buyback arrangement is one that is proceeds on the understanding that the shareholder can sell. The only point is the corporation gets the first crack. It's like you give somebody an option to buy your car or your house. Well, they get the right to pick up the option, the right to buy, but they have to meet your price. You don't have to give your shares away to them. I'm not making this very clear, I guess, but a buyback provision that doesn't mean anything unless it assumes the shareholder can sell. And if the corporation, if the shares are worth $25 or $1,000, $10,000, and the shareholder after 1991 wants to sell, and let's say Exxon says, here's $10,000 for your shares, you turn to your corporation and say, okay, you've got the right to buy back before I can sell. I'll give you the chance to buy them back. Your corporation says, well, we don't have any money. Well, then you can still sell to Exxon. Otherwise, I mean, buyback doesn't mean anything if they're the only people who can buy it back in a commercial setting. That isn't buyback, that's a monopoly. Right of first refusal is what people are really talking about, and that's what's provided for now. Your corporation could do that now.
Right, but I guess I was under the misunderstanding that they were actually trying to prevent selling to anyone else other than their corporation.
Yeah. Well, maybe they are, but I'll have to look at that resolution again. I brought it with me, and I glanced at it and thought, oh, this is the
buyback. Well, there was an awful lot of discussion because there were the six concepts, and then it broke down to eight or nine resolutions, and it was all worked out the next day, and there was an awful lot of discussion and a lot of questions, and it was pretty confusing there for a while.
It does get that.
Yeah, I know.
Well, thanks. I guess I've added to the confusion. Yes?
I have a question.
Do you mind if we just put it on this microphone? We're kind of...
I'm Cece Reardon. I have been a resident here for 4 years. And in corporations, I have I have an uncle that owns a large corporation now. And I have worked for people that have owned corporations. And I know that a lot of the corporations do put their land into trust because of the tax purpose and the tax write-offs that they do get. And I know that a lot of the trust that they do is because they do want that land to go to their children. And it's like a clause that they specifically will say that it's to be passed on from one generation to another generation, so that specifically they do not lose that land and that land value, because each year the land value continues to go up. It does not decrease. And you want to hold on to that land because that's your value. That's your whatever you have for your bank pocketbook. So in order to do it, most corporations will take the land and put it into a trust and put it into trust for their children in order that it will carry on and make sure that they do have that land and have it as a kind of financial background and they can always utilize it. And then what they will do in order, in most of the corporations, they will lease the land for 99 years. And the reason they lease them for 99 years is because you have that land. Nobody can come in and lease it and take away from that land. Plus, you're guaranteeing that the money is coming in. You don't lease it for 5 or 10 years. You lease it for 99 years. And then when that 99-year contract comes up, you can, they can either break that contract or they can renew it again. But it's a kind of a hold that the corporations have. And I know this for a fact because this is what my uncle did, and his children now are worth lots of million dollars. And because of his mind up here, he did it, and he did it. He was a very man that didn't have anything. And I know that the corporation here can do it too. It's just knowing how to do it and making it so it's worthwhile to them so they don't lose that land.
Thank you, Ms. Reardon. Would anybody else like to say anything this evening? I should say that I have a letter from Phil Tudiakov, who is, I believe, the chairman of the board of the Aleut Aleutian Pribilof Island Association, the regional nonprofit. And he said he very much wanted to be here this evening, but of course he is in Washington, D.C. now in connection with the reparations claim that is coming before Congress. So he wrote to say that he had very much wished to be here. He says he will be preparing written testimony that he will send to my office in Anchorage, so I will look forward to that. I should also say that Ray Hudson has handed in a paper on land and resource conflicts in the Aleutian Islands that I'm very grateful for, and that we will, with his permission, make part of the record of these proceedings. Well, does anyone else wish to say anything this evening?
My name is Cynthia Galaktionov. I've lived in Unalaska for 8 years, and I've been married to an Aleut man for that same amount of time. During that time, I've learned so much about the Unalaska area and the Aleut culture. And so far tonight, I haven't heard it, but I know everyone, almost everyone in this room, has been thinking that the children are the hope of Unalaska and the hope of the Aleut people. And they have to be the ones that we think about. I know that I've been following you throughout the state, and I know that this is a concern of a lot of people, that they must be shareholders in whatever the native peoples have, whatever concept that they come up with. The children have to be considered 100%. And in Unalaska, I know it's very important to my family. As my husband was growing up in this area, his father shared with him the beliefs and the ways of life of the Aleut people, the everything, the fishing, the hunting of the seals, the language, which is, like Father says, is dying out, unfortunately. Everything was shared with him. And now today, he's sharing with our son those same things. And we have to keep that alive for Michael and for people, the little ones, to share with their kids. They need their own spot in Unalaska. They need a, like I was saying earlier, a little spot of land, a little piece of their own. And it may not seem like a lot, but when we go fishing, and I know Gertie can share this with you, when we go fishing in the summer and you haul in those 300 or 400 salmon, it's nice to just have your own little place, which we don't have, but we do share among our family, but nice to have your own little place just to call your own, just to be there. And once that's there and in your family, then it's nothing that can be replaced. And I appreciate your coming out here. I think it's one of the best things I've seen happen to the Alaska Native culture. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, anybody else like to say anything? Yes, sir.
Just very briefly, my ancestors were booted out of their land about 2,000 years ago and managed to keep their culture and their language. I've seen other peoples keep their land and lose their culture. There seems to be some question as to what's valuable. People want to keep the land, and yet the language and the customs are passing away. Over the next 20, 50, 100 years, many things may change, but how, if the Aleut people want to remain distinct and feel Aleut with the biological lines being diluted perhaps by intermarriage, what provision other than keeping land, which has nothing about how people act or treat their children or speak or regard the land, how can that provide the key? Isn't language and custom equally important, and can't they be maintained without so much worry about the federal government? Doesn't that take organization by the people themselves simply to maintain it within themselves? And isn't that something that only they can do and that no one else can do for them, with or without money, land, or rights? It's simply a matter of individual determination.
Yes, thank you, Mike. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of truth in that. These are profound questions going to someone's sense of individual and collective identity, and often not easy to articulate. But I've found wherever I've gone that people feel that the loss of native land in Alaska would anybody else like to say anything tonight? Well, let me thank you all for coming tonight. We started yesterday at Sand Point, and in our trip to the Aleutians, and we had a meeting there yesterday afternoon and yesterday evening, and a very lively discussion. We've now had a very good day here this afternoon and this evening. 30 people have spoken here this afternoon and this evening altogether, and it's been very helpful to me. Tomorrow we're holding a meeting at Akutan, and then we're going to St. Paul at the end, later in the week, so that we will, I hope, have a good idea about how people here in the Aleutians and the Pribilofs feel about these questions. So I want to thank you. I find that as I go around the state, the whole picture seems to be coming together piece by piece. I hope it is. And this meeting tonight has been helpful in putting together one of the pieces anyway. And I think if we all talk about these things and think about them, we'll come up with some answers. So I will be writing my report in the spring, and it'll be made public next summer, and it'll be sent to you, and I hope it will be useful to you. So thanks again, and the meeting stands adjourned.
Except if anyone would like to add additional comments anytime between now and early in the next year, they're welcome to send them to our offices. And if anyone would like a business card, I'll put a stack over here We'd appreciate that.